Next, we're going to hear from Ryan Thomas, who is an assistant professor of surgery at the University of Florida in Gainesville. He's a surgical oncologist who has been interested in how the microbiome may affect cancer therapy. Dr. Thomas.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank Dr. Alverde for the invitation to present today and for the college for the opportunity to present as well. I'm going to thank Dr. Nicholson and Shogun for doing some of the basic grunt work in terms of opening up the discussion for basic microbial analysis. So what I want to do today is basically give a 30,000-foot overview of how the microbiota and microbiome may impact our cancer therapy. And so I want to present some very groundbreaking work from a variety of groups and institutions to go over this topic. So I do not have any disclosures. So chemotherapeutic resistance in cancer therapy remains a very challenging clinical problem. We've all had patients that, despite best standard of care and multimodality therapy, still have recurrence either distantly or locally. And so the chemotherapeutic resistance can be categorized in two main ways. One is primary chemotherapeutic resistance, and this is actually present in up to 50% of cancers, even before seeing any chemotherapeutics or radiation therapy. They have an inherent ability to be resistant to whatever therapy you throw at it. The other type is acquired. So this is probably the more well-known, and these are cancers that through either environmental impact or genomic alterations develop over time, and they develop their chemo resistance through a culmination of genetic events that result in a resistant phenotype. So these phenotypes have been described in a variety of mechanisms, both from a human genome as well as a cancer genome standpoint. So both these genomes play a role, and we know many of these. They'll be familiar to the crowd, such as cytochrome P450 enzymes in terms of various drug metabolomics, and this doesn't necessarily have to be just chemotherapy. So we know that a variety of drugs are metabolized in this way, but in terms of the cancer genome, we all know about different genetic permutations, such as in BRAF or KRAS, that affect the therapy that we give to our patients. And so a lot of research has focused on these two genomes, and we alter therapy based on these genomes. But one genome that has been relatively understudied is the microbial genome, or the microbiome. And so as you listen to the presentations today, it's important that there's a difference when we talk microbiome. This is the collection of the genome of the microbiota, so all the microbial organisms. And although my colleagues and I are focusing mainly on the bacterial microbiome, bacterial microbiota, that's not to exclude things like viruses and fungi and other organisms that are on and within us. So this afternoon, I want to speak about the microbiome and its influence on chemotherapeutic resistance. And so prior data has shown that the microbiota alters drug pharmacokinetics in a variety of different mechanisms. So for example, the HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, lovastatin, simvastatin, other ones, have been shown to be altered by the microbiota. Digoxin, for example, and paracetamol or Tylenol also is affected by a patient's microbiota. But what is it about chemotherapy, and how could the microbiome and the microbiota potentially impact chemotherapy and ultimately our patient's survival after cancer surgery? And so there is a very nice acronym, a very nice review that Alexander published last year, where this acronym of TIMER was coined. And this acronym essentially defines the various mechanisms whereby the microbiota can impact chemotherapeutic resistance. And so today I'd like to review these and go over these various mechanisms, provide examples of each, and provide insight into how this may affect our patients. So the T for timer represents translocation. And as I describe a study, this represents translocation of the microbiota, either out of a tumor, for example, as Dr. Shogan alluded to, translocation of bacteria out of the gastric lumen and gaining access to lymph nodes, for example. The I represents immunomodulation. And as we go forward in cancer care and push the boundaries, there are many, many trials, as we all may know, looking at the role of the immune system in cancer therapy. And so I will present data demonstrating immunomodulation by the microbiota for cancer therapy. The M represents metabolism, as in metabolism of drugs and drug byproducts, enzymatic degradation of drugs, and reduced diversity, which we've heard about in terms of reduction of the diversity of what would be termed a normal microbiota into a abnormal microbiota. And so first, the example of translocation. So cyclophosphamide is an alkylating agent, which many of you may be familiar with. It treats a variety of both solid and liquid tumors, including breast and ovarian from a solid side. But it does have a dose-limiting side effect in that it causes mucositis. And so this study that was published a couple years ago in Science was a very eloquent study where they treated animals with sarcoma xenografts with cyclophosphamide. And in the in these left panels, what they did is after treatment of the mice with the cyclophosphamide, they had both control and cyclophosphamide-treated mice where they harvested the intestine. So this was not intraluminal delivery of cyclophosphamide. This was intraperitoneal delivery of cyclophosphamide. And the agent itself resulted in a decreased villi length, signifying increased inflammation in these mice. And so they further looked at the lymph nodes in the region of this harvested intestine. And they looked at both the aerobic and anaerobic bacteria that was able to be cultured from the intestine, as well as the mesenteric lymph nodes and spleen. And what they demonstrated is that with cyclophosphamide treatment, which is the solid circle, there is a statistically significant increase in the translocation of bacteria to the spleen and to the mesenteric lymph node in these cyclophosphamide-treated animals, suggesting that there is barrier dysfunction just from the treatment of these mice. Furthermore, as we've seen by my two colleagues who presented before me, the graph in the lower right is a PCOA analysis of the genre from these animals. And so it demonstrates that with cyclophosphamide treatment, there's a statistically significant shift in the microbiota just by the treatment of these animals with cyclophosphamide. So furthermore, I'm only presenting obviously a snippet from the Science paper that had about 50 different figures, but these animals were then treated with vancomycin to obliterate the gram-positive bacteria. And so what they showed that with sarcoma xenografts, the depletion of the gram-positive with vancomycin eliminated any statistical difference in xenograft growth. Whereas if you let the gram-positives grow and treat them with colistin, there is a statistically significant decrease in xenograft growth in the mice that were treated with cyclophosphamide, suggesting that the gram-positive bacteria were required for cyclophosphamide efficacy. Furthermore, they did combination studies then that showed that, that with vancomycin and chemotherapy together, you likewise have a statistically significant difference in the tumor growth in these animals. So in summary, for the translocation, the clinical implications from a study such as this demonstrates that increased intestinal permeability does exist with treatment by, in this case, cyclophosphamide, but it results in bacterial translocation. What that bacterial translocation results in can be varied from patient to patient and from example to example. But it can demonstrate increased infectious complications, one may surmise, but antibiotic administration may have effects on chemotherapeutic efficacy, as we can see by the vancomycin data that was presented. The next is immunomodulation. One popular and very exciting area of research involves the PD-1 and PD-L1 pathway. So as a review, in order for a T cell to, demonstrated here, to kill a tumor cell, there has to be a tumor antigen recognition by the T cell receptor. However, if the inhibitory PD-1, PD-L1 pathway exists, it can essentially shut off that killing mechanism. And so there have been multiple drugs that have been designed and are in use right now that essentially inhibit the inhibitor. So it takes off the brake from that and allows the T cell to kill tumor cells. And this is most popularly used for melanoma and lung cancer. This study by Sivan, in published in Science in 2015, was a very interesting study where they looked at melanoma and the effect of the microbiota on melanoma growth and PD-1, PD-L1 pathways. In this first figure here, there were two different mice that this lab ordered. And so this was almost a serendipitous sort of finding that they had. TAC represents Taconic. JAX represents Jackson Labs. These are two vendors for mice that are commonly bought in animal research. And what they did is they simply grew melanoma xenografts in these mice. And they demonstrated a statistically significant decrease in tumor volume in the Jackson lab mice. Well, why is this? They were the same breed, the same strain of mice. There's no reason why these two should be different. Yet when they co-house the mice together, because mice have a propensity to eat one another's stool, it essentially was a fecal transplantation, as Dr. Alverdi mentioned in the opening slides. So they essentially inoculated each other, and they demonstrated that the Jackson mice, the melanomas, grew at the same rate as the Taconic. And so why was this? So then they did some very nice studies where they did controlled fecal transplantation from one strain to the next with and without treatment. And the main figure to look at, the main lines to look at, are these at the bottom. So the lines at the bottom all have a statistically significant decrease in melanoma xenograft growth. But the common thing here is that they all received or had pre-existing stool from the Jackson lab mice. So there's something that was in the Jackson lab mice stool that resulted in decreased xenograft growth. And so through a variety of experiments, they then were able to look at PD-L1. The reason that they jump to PD-L1 is that through sequencing analysis, they were able to demonstrate that the Jackson lab mice had a type of bacteria called segmented filamentous bacteria, which had increased IL-17 production. And so then they surmised that there was an immunologic relationship why these mice had lower xenograft growth rates. And so indeed, their hypothesis proved true, in that Taconic mice in the blue compared to the Jackson lab mice in the red had a statistically significant decrease in the xenograft growth rates. It's the same thing that I just showed in the prior one. The difference is that with the Taconic, if you treat them with a PD-L1 inhibitor, there was a decrease in tumor growth rate, as you would hope or expect. However, the Jackson mice with the Jackson lab stool had an even greater decrease in xenograft growth rate. Through sequencing analysis, they then determined that Bifidobacterium was the likely culprit. And so what they then were able to do is using germ-free mice, so these are mice without any bacteria, viruses, archaea, anything, they transplanted Bifidobacterium back into these mice. So that's the only bacteria these mice had ever, will ever or had ever seen. And they demonstrated that with Bifidobacterium in purple, there was a statistically significant decrease in xenograft growth rate. But if you add a PD-L1 inhibitor onto that, you have an even greater decrease in growth rate. And the interesting thing is that this was all in the taconic mice. So these were taconic-derived mice that were germ-free, showing that they were able to replicate the phenotype from the Jackson lab mice. And so in terms of the immunomodulation, the clinical implications, I think, are pretty clear that failure of anti-PD-1 or PD-L1 therapy in our patients may in fact be based on their microbiota, but certainly more data are needed to support this, but it could explain non-responders. Metabolism is another area where the microbiota might play a role, and one important chemotherapy is gemcitabine. This is a nucleoside analog used in many hepatopancreatic biliary cancers. It's metabolized by cytidine deaminase, and so this enzyme converts the difluorodeoxycytidine precursor right here into difluorodeoxyuridine. So it essentially metabolizes and inactivates this drug. And in this study by Geller just published last year, they were able to demonstrate that bacteria possess this enzyme, cytidine deaminase, abbreviated CDD, and that there are various forms of this enzyme. And the bacteria have both a CDD short form, denoted by CDDS, and a CDD or cytidine deaminase long form, demonstrated by CDDL. And so what they did is they very simply took bacteria where they knew the length of this CDD enzyme. They took bacteria and put gemcitabine into a dish, just in vivo experiments, and then they measured the gemcitabine metabolism based on it. And so what they demonstrated is that the bacteria that they used that had the CDD long form, both Klebsiella pneumoniae and E. coli specific strain K12 had the long form of CDD, there is a statistically significant reduction in gemcitabine that was remaining in that dish, suggesting that these bacteria were able to essentially chew up the gemcitabine that was given to it. And so you can imagine clinically, if there are bacteria present that are able to quickly metabolize gemcitabine, that's less gemcitabine that's available for our patients to treat someone adjuvantly or neoadjuvantly. So the clinical implications, again, this may explain the resistance that some patients, especially for pancreatic cancer, cholangiocarcinoma, that's present, in that these patients may have long form of CDD. And there are clinical trials recruiting right now looking in that. But microbial manipulation may be able to turn non-responders into responders. Next is enzymatic degradation. Most common and published would be irinotecan. This is a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor used in a variety of cancers, including colon cancer and pancreatic cancer. But the problem is that 40% of patients have dose-limiting diarrhea where they have to stop treatment. They come off treatment. No treatment means that potentially cancer cells can blossom again. And so irinotecan is metabolized by the liver into both active and inactive metabolites. So when irinotecan is administered, it's taken up by the liver and converted into this inactive metabolite, SN38G. And the way that that works is that the liver puts a glucuronyl substrate onto the irinotecan and inactivates it. And that's excreted through the biliary system and then pass through the stool, as demonstrated here. However, there are bacteria that are present that possess beta-glucuronidase that is able to cleave off that glucuronide and reactivate the irinotecan. And what happens is now you have active irinotecan within the GI system when it should be in the systemic circulation. And what happens is that active irinotecan results in dose-limiting diarrhea. So then you have to come off therapy. And so this study demonstrated that the beta-glucuronidase present within the E. coli is able to not only cause colitis, but inhibition of this enzyme is able to attenuate that. And so these graphs here on the upper left simply are administration of either sham, the inhibitor, irinotecan is CPT-11, or CPT-11 with the inhibitor. And what they did is, in the upper left, is just the number of bloody bowel movements that the mice had, demonstrating the what would be dose-limiting toxicity. And so you can see that as you go from left to right on the columns, it's a time course from 8 to 11 days where the further along with treatment you get, the more bloody bowel movements you have. However, giving the E. coli beta-glucuronidase inhibitor mediates this colitis. And this is demonstrated over in the right panel where the vehicle and inhibitor alone have a normal phenotype of the colon. However, given irinotecan, you can see the colitis and rapid influx of neutrophils and inflammatory cells, and that is attenuated with inhibition of the beta-glucuronidase. So the clinical implications, again, it cleaves the glucuronide, creating an active substrate in the gut. And so clinically, we would be able to inhibit this enzyme to allow patients to stay on the needed chemotherapy for a longer duration of time. Finally, there's reduced diversity as a mechanism whereby the microbiota can alter chemotherapeutic efficacy. Methotrexate is an anti-metabolite agent, and it inhibits the de novo thymidine synthesis, which is necessary for DNA replication. It's used in the treatment of breast, lung, and other cancers. And what a group showed with treatment of mice with methotrexate, or I'm sorry, humans with methotrexate, is that it temporarily reduced the bacterial diversity, yet resulted in increased mucositis, which is also a dose-limiting toxicity of this medication. And so here you can see that in the control patients, there is a great diversity of bacteria. You see different variations of the species of bacteria. But as the methotrexate administration continues up to day 4, the microbiota is essentially overtaken by Bacteroides. And so in this way, it's shown that this chemotherapy can affect the microbiota diversity as well as increasing toxicity in these patients. So in summary, the TIMER acronym, I think, is a good one to keep in mind, the various mechanisms that potentially can impact chemotherapeutic resistance that's mediated by the microbiota. There certainly are many avenues of research that are still open. My lab is actively looking at the role of the microbiota in pancreatic cancer chemoresistance. And a lot of these mechanisms crosstalk with one another. And so it's important to know that despite these studies, there is a caveat that many microbiome studies are associative studies and not causative. And that's where the field is still in its infancy, especially as it relates to oncology. But I think there's clear evidence for the interaction of microbes with chemotherapeutic efficacy as well as toxicity. And the microbial immune pathway is going to be an important one as we move forward. Thank you very much.